This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Dr. William Haglund, is engaged in the grim work of exhuming mass graves in Bosnia. He's a forensic anthropologist from Seattle who's leading a forensic team organized by the group Physicians for Human Rights. After the bodies are exhumed, they're being examined by a team of pathologists. These teams are mandated to provide evidence of war crimes to the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia. The information the teams uncover will also be made available to Bosnians who are looking for loved ones who disappeared during the war. Thousands of Muslim men disappeared as cities fell to the Serbs during the war, and many of these Muslims are believed to now lie in mass graves. Haglund has exhumed mass graves in Rwanda and Central America. He's former chief medical investigator for King County, Washington. Earlier this summer, he exhumed a mass grave in Cherska. Now he's working on a series of smaller graves in Nova Kasaba, just outside of Srebrenica. 154 bodies in the Cherska grave were buried with their hands tied behind their backs. We phoned Haglund yesterday, and he told us he's also finding bodies with their hands bound in the new graves.
The scenario at the pastures we're presently digging at Nova Kasaba, the first seven individuals, all of them had their hands bound behind their backs, some with wire, and that the grave that we've just taken out eight, and there are more yet to come out, the majority of those also have had their hands bound behind their back.
I guess that's pretty surefire evidence of execution.
Well, it's certainly surefire evidence that they weren't combating when they died.
What you're doing this work for the International Criminal Tribunal. What information are they hoping to learn from the mass graves that you're investigating?
Well, from the investigations themselves of the graves, number one, wish to confirm indeed that there are graves there, that there are bodies present. Number two, whatever the scenario of witnesses or investigative information, you wish to try to see if the information in the grave collaborates that information. So from the graves, you hope to collect evidence. You hope in the collection of evidence that you might be able to identify some individuals so that they can be returned to their families. You would also would be creating a historical document as you collect the evidence, which would stand up to historical revisionists who say, oh, gee, nothing happened there. There's no people dead. There's no people in the grave. They're just combatants. They died of cholera or whatever people are wont to say. You would hope that the information, that the evidence collected can be given over, in this case, to the tribunal, and that individuals responsible can be held accountable. And then I think the highest hope, the supreme hope of all this might be too optimistic, but you would hope that these kinds of endeavors in the future can help that these incidents would not happen again in the future, would not be repeated, that people who would be prone to kill people, to take advantage of them like this, would think, the world is watching, and I'm going to be held accountable. I can't do this.
What phase are you in with the grave that you're exhuming now?
Well, we're going in sequence from one grave to another. We're going to have a presence in this area for 2 to 3 months, just in the exhumation phase. We've finished one grave. We're at the second location that looks like it's several smaller graves, and then we'll proceed to another. Now, after we've finished the first exhumation, those bodies have been removed to another site where we'll be collecting all the bodies we exhume, and they will be examined in a morgue environment.
Could you give us a picture of what you've learned so far about looking at the big picture, all the graves that you've exhumed so far? What have you learned about who was killed? And what clues do you have about who did the killing?
Well, we've just completed one grave. We know that individuals in civilian clothing were killed, probably most of them are going to be males, that many of them died defenseless with their hands bound behind their back. At the particular site we looked at, we know where the killers basically stood. We knew where victims were when they were killed. We knew where found out where the dirt that covered them up was taken from. That kind of information.
Where you are now in Nova Kasaba, would you have realized that that area had graves? Could you see that with the naked eye? Is it noticeable?
If we were driving along the road and didn't have previous investigative information, we would think we were looking at a beautiful pasture, fringed by trees and behind which ran a river, and maybe you could go trout fishing in.
And so you get the information from survivors about where they think the site might be?
Well, and other investigative information, or like we saw last year, surveillance photos were released that had pictures of disturbances that people asserted were graves.
And how do you begin to disinter the bodies from the grave?
First you have to ascertain really that their body's there. That's the first phase.
How do you do that?
And when one way to do it would be to find the area that the grave is presumed to be in, or probe the area to find that you find that there's a detect that there's a maybe decomposing material underneath, and you could test trench it and dig right down to the surface of the bodies and actually see them. Then once we've done that, then we would try to get an idea of the size of the grave. That is the area, the area extent, not so much the depth, because we oftentimes don't know the depth until we've completely emptied the grave. And so we define the perimeter of the grave itself. And then you can put together your strategy for approaching the grave. Once we've gotten the perimeter and decide how we're actually going to approach the grave, then the idea basically is to remove the overburden, the dirt, the debris, the material that's on top of the bodies. And once you get close to the bodies, then we try to very carefully define the individuals. It's almost like bringing them forward in a relief. You remove the dirt, the bodies are the relief that's left. Then you find that, you know, one body starts here. You might start with a hand, for instance, and then you follow the hand up the arm. And then you might run into the leg of another individual that's on top of them. So then you uncover the leg of that individual, find out there's a torso of somebody on top of that. That person may be the top individual, and you can uncover that whole body. That would be your choice of the first body to take out, depending upon how much of the grave you wanted to expose at any one time. So you define the complete body, and then you remove it, because the object is to remove complete individuals, because that raises the potential of the story that the victims can tell, and also the possibility of identifying the individual and knowing most about them.
What kind of condition have most of the bodies been in Bosnia that you've disinterred?
Well, that's a good question. The bodies at the Cirska site were well on their way to becoming skeletons. The bodies that we're presently digging are very well preserved. However, in one grave, it has somewhat to do with the proximity of the body itself to the surface of the ground. It has to do with the actual environment of the grave itself. The first grave, where the bodies were skeletalized, had very good drainage, very loosely compacted, with a very loose soil. The bodies were very shallowly buried, and so that when the sun shone on the hillside, it could warm up the ground and warm up the bodies under the ground, and they would accelerate their decomposition. The site now is fine clay. It holds the water very well. It provides a cool environment for the bodies. So the bodies are actually relatively stable and preserved. So it retards decomposition in the normal sense that we think of it, at least in making skeletons. Each grave actually has its own character dependent upon many variables. Like the ones we've just mentioned.
I guess the story that a body can tell you is going to be different if the body has already decomposed, or if the body is more intact.
In some respects. I mean, the more fresh the body is, the more soft tissue evidence that you have. For instance, if we speak in terms of identification, if you have soft tissue, you have a very fresh body, you can recognize features, you could see tattoos, you could get fingerprints. With skeletons, you can't do that. As time goes on, the evidence becomes more rarefied. That's true.
Now, if the body's decomposing, do the clothes help hold the body together so that you can determine which parts belong to which body?
Absolutely. The clothing provides an envelope for the body and really assists us, especially with skeletalized remains, for holding the body together. The most problematic areas, of course, are hands and feet that aren't in shoes, or areas that are really maybe fractured and traumatized. Those are areas that are difficult to pick up. So usually when we have, for instance, skeletalized remains, as many of the remains were at Cirska, then we would have to pick up all the bones of the hands separately and separately bag those and make sure that they stayed with the individual in their own separate body bag as we collected them.
Do the positions of the bodies in the grave reveal information that the War Crimes Tribunal could use?
Yes.
Is that telling?
It's telling. It's telling in on several levels, and I guess today, I looked in this grave, and I saw people in sitting postures, people sprawled on their backs. Their bodies are very jumbled in akimbo and just sprawled out and intertwined. And I was thinking as we had them sort of released so that you could sort of see them lying there. It's very, and you have hands tied behind their back. I've seen some of these paintings by Chagall where you have dreams. It almost looked like I would envision a Chagall nightmare, these remains lying in there in these grotesque positions and light, almost lifelike postures and then really contorted positions. It was very very moving to see that.
What information do those positions give you?
Well, it gives you the information that they were put in that grave with disrespect. They were just thrown away, discarded, covered up. That's one of the some of the information it gives you. It can give you information about the sequence in which they were placed in the grave. It can give you could give you information about the relative time that people were killed. Sometimes graves that, for instance, contain family members from larger groups that can tell you information about who's related to who, because often that's not uncommon that family members will huddle together and hold hands as they're being killed.
Can you tell if the bodies you've been exhuming are the bodies of civilians or soldiers?
They're dressed as civilians.
And that's,
I might ask you, why do you ask that question? It's been asked about 30 times to me today. Why is that an important question?
I assume it's an important question because I think, that in times of war, there's a different standard that's applied to killing soldiers than to killing civilians. And so I would imagine that in a war crimes tribunal, there'd be a different standard that people were held to if they killed civilians.
Not if they have their hands bound behind their backs and are defenseless when they're executed.
Good point. So that's violating international standards.
Yes.
Whether they're soldiers or civilians.
That's correct. Yes.
On the phone from us from Bosnia Herzegovina is Dr. William Hagland, and he's a forensic anthropologist who's leading an investigative team that is exhuming mass graves in Bosnia. The evidence they collect will be given to the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia, and the forensics team is coordinated by the group Physicians for Human Rights. Dr. Hagland, let's take a short break and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Dr. William Hagland, a forensic anthropologist who's leading an investigative team that is exhuming mass graves in Bosnia. Dr. Hagland, I imagine that exhuming these graves, that you're exposed to the constant stench of death, and I wonder what you do to protect yourself against that.
Well, actually, it was funny because a reporter asked me today to give her the chemical formula for the odor of death. But Yes, bodies decompose, and they don't smell pleasant. You sort of get used to it. I have always felt that your nose sort of dies on you, and it's wiser than you are, and you just get accustomed to it. Some people wear masks. Our people are really not doing that at this point. The smell is something you become accustomed to.
What's the psychological toll that this work takes on you?
I am asked that all the time, and I'm not really aware of the great psychological toll. I think probably a psychological morass that people might perceive that they would get in dealing with death has a lot to do with their own experiences with death and fears of death and maybe inexperiences with death. And then under the undercurrent and what buoys that up, it's just the activities that you're doing. You believe in them, or you're engrossed. You're just subsumed by them because they're things that propel you through the whole event. I think there's also a feeling of historicity in what we're doing. I think there's a feeling of privilege. There's a feeling of challenge. There's a feeling of exhaustion at the end of the day. And I think all of that sort of adds to this psychological gestalt, but it's not a negative thing.
Well, what do you do at night? I mean, do you have a way to unwind at night? Do you feel guilty if you have a good time at night?
No, absolutely not. We talk to each other. The first thing we do when we get home is try to find a shower with a shower cubicle with a handle on it so that you can operate the showers. Seems like the people sort of take the handles off the shower so that they make sure they have one so somebody else can't steal it. Then we go and eat. And then with fresh clothes and food, people do various things. Some people read a book. Some people are working on the computers, catching up on the spreadsheets. I've been on the phone right now for 2.5-3 hours. And after that, I'll probably go work on the computer for a bit and maybe read a book, go to sleep.
What are you reading?
Oh, I'm just reading detective novels.
Perfect.
I think I just finished Snow Falling on Cedars and we're trading books around. So,
was this work as easy for you to do? And when I say easy, I mean that you can do your work without obsessing on the deaths and without having so much empathy that it gets in the way of your work. Were you able to do that the first time you exhumed a mass grave?
Yes. I think the thing that's really obsessing to me is the details of what it takes to get this done.
Right.
Of where the next anthropologist has come from, or where are the trowels, or where's the metric graph paper, things like that. I worked in a very fine medical examiner's office in Seattle. It has a fine national reputation. I worked there for 16 years. I liked my job. I liked the people I was working with. Things got to be, the same and repetitive. I needed something different to do. This seemed much more challenging in a lot of ways, and it offered me a way to be more focused on the anthropology than just more death in general and that context of the job that I was in. And I felt that I wanted to do the human rights, and I wanted to focus on the anthropology. And mass graves are in some ways a horizon that is not really well understood in forensic anthropology and in forensic investigations, because fortunately we haven't had to do really mass graves. And we've been arguing the last couple of days of what is a mass grave? Is it two or more people, or three or more people?
Is that important to
caught up in numbers? No. Well, it's semantics. To me, it's not important. To me, what's important is what I would like to think is important is that these are individual human beings, and that's why you're there. And to the survivors that are wondering where their loved one is, where their husband, their father, their sister, their brother, their daughter, their spouse, whatever. They're wondering who those people are. It doesn't really matter to them if that person is dead in the grave with 5,000 people or 10 people or 20 people, or they're alone. They're dead. They're gone. They don't know where they are. They don't know where they are. And that's the tragedy in it all. The numbers get the attention of the world. The numbers compile and make more compelling the urge and the will of tribunals and that to investigate. But the personal tragedy to the survivors is there if it's one person or a mass grave, whatever you want to define a mass grave as being.
Dr. Haglund, thank you so much for taking some time out to talk with us.
Okay.
Dr. William Haglund is a forensic anthropologist leading a forensics team exhuming mass graves in Bosnia. They're reporting to the International War Crimes Tribunal. The team is sponsored by the group Physicians for Human Rights. Haglund says his team expects to unearth 4 to 6 more mass grave sites for the tribunal. After Bosnia, Haglund expects to return to Rwanda. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.